Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for April 15th, 2019. We'll begin our reading today with the front page article entitled New Leadership, Williams Talks Short and Long-Term Goals by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said it's starting to sink in that he won a four-way race April 2nd to be Danville's mayor for the next 4 years, and Williams said he's ready to really get to work. He said winning will sink in more once a project's successor is found and he can turn his focus full-time to the city. Williams, 41, has been serving the last few months as acting mayor when Mayor Scott Eisenhower left his position early in November to take a Rantoul administrator job. This has allowed Williams to get in at least a four-day week routine, as he also serves as Project Success Executive Director. He hasn't been at City Hall on Thursdays. Project Success of Vermilion County utilizes grant funding to support children and families through after-school and other programs. Williams already had furniture moved around in the mayor's office to make the space more his own. He's also met with city department heads to start talking about the future and is preparing for the city council vote this week on the first city budget he's overseeing. Williams and the other newly elected or re-elected aldermen and city treasurer will be sworn in on May 7th. Williams also that night expects to name his Ward 1 alderman replacement. With Williams becoming mayor, he still had 2 years remaining in his four-year alderman term through 2021. He said he has had some people reach out to him expressing interest in the seat. It's very different, Williams said, about being mayor versus alderman. As an alderman, he's one of 14 voting on items. But as mayor, he said he provides direction for the council for planning, resolutions, and action items. He said the mayor works with the alderman and community to do what they think is best for the city. Williams talked about some of his short-term and long-term goals. His first short-term goal is to get the city's 2019-2020 budget finalized and passed. He supports the budget draft with a 1% hotel-motel tax increase and eliminating one of the code enforcement inspector positions, going from 4 to 3, and the public affairs specialist position. He wants First Fridays to continue downtown with a budget stipend, and he's also not concerned about having one fewer code enforcement officer. We'll still be able to manage it well, Williams said. Williams said another short-term goal is to make appointments to a number of boards and commissions that have vacancies or need reappointments. Appointments are needed on the Airport Authority Board, David S. Palmer Arena Board, Danville Public Library Board, Public Building Commission, and others. He said work also has to start on hiring police and fire chiefs. Job descriptions and union negotiations are needed. The Board of Fire and Police Commissioners already has started the process of interviewing 21 potential probationary police officers to come up with a new eligibility list for openings and to reestablish the city's problem-oriented policing unit. Public safety is definitely going to be a focus, Williams said. We are setting the groundwork to reinstate our POP unit, Williams said, about targeting areas. The city again will seek applications for a new corporation council. Williams said they hope to have more than 5 interested applicants this time. Williams also said the city's working on a couple development projects. City officials also are getting ready for increased city park use this spring and summer and the city pool opening at Garfield Park. Some of Williams's long-term goals relate to changing the perception of the city as not being business-friendly, getting a better handle on the demolition list and program, analyzing storm and sanitary sewer problems, working more with the Housing Authority of the City of Danville, and neighborhood redevelopment. He said work has already started to develop a clear step-by-step process of what needs to be done in the development and redevelopment process so communication is improved and there are no surprises with developers. He wants to make sure city ordinances are as business-friendly as possible. Williams said he's looking at a slight reorganization with the Public Works and Community Development divisions. He said the city will wait to fill the Open Planning and Urban Services Manager position until they see what those divisions look like. He said the city still has more than 200 structures on its demolition list, and he wants to do a reassessment of the demolition program and how they're prioritized, based on certain criteria. He wants to see the structures prioritized by safety first. He said the city is working on asset management of sewers. We have to know where we are to come up with a plan for where we end up, he said. He said he doesn't support concentrated low-income housing downtown, as the Housing Authority of the City of Danville is proposing, or elsewhere. He supports the single-family homes proposed and scattered site housing, but not the apartment complexes. The city also is working with the Housing Authority to possibly give the sidewalks at the Fair Oaks Housing Complex off East Fairchild Street to the Housing Authority, with the city maintaining the easement rights. Groups loiter on the sidewalks, which are public property, and making them private property, the Housing Authority could help move the people along, he said. Williams said they've also talked with the Housing Authority about reestablishing a police unit at Fair Oaks to be a point of contact and liaison there. Our next article is entitled DAC Fair Draws Employers with Jobs to Fill by Carol Rem, Danville. Representatives from nearly 70 area businesses will recruit potential new employees this week at Danville Area Community College's Career Connections Job Fair. The annual job fair, which started in 1995, is set for 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday in the Mary Miller Gymnasium. The job fair offers DAC students and community members an opportunity to meet with area employers who are recruiting for current or near-future part-time and full-time positions. Participants also can learn about the local job market and the responsibilities and requirements needed for various jobs. As in past years, DAC charges businesses a nominal $25 registration fee to set up at the job fair to offset some of the cost of the event. Nick Catlett, coordinator of Career and Veteran Services at DAC, said he was pleased that 68 employers who had registered by the April 12th deadline were running out of tables and room in the gym, he said. Every year, the job fair always generates a large crowd of job seekers. About 55 employers were present at last year's job fair, which drew 400 attendees. We had 400 job seekers last year, and we're hoping for that many or more this year, Catlett said. Kelly McBride, career service specialist, encourages job fair participants to dress appropriately and, if needed, to borrow the interview clothing that will be available at the job fair. Please be presentable, she said. No flip-flops, sweatpants, or clothes that are dirty or with holes in them. I'm going to have a rack with different sizes of men's and women's clothing, she added. Job fair participants also are encouraged to bring plenty of copies of their resume. Be prepared for an on-the-spot interview and not to bring any children to the event. McBride said, adding that she will not be able to make extra copies of resumes for people. The occupation fields that will be represented at this year's job fair are varied and include manufacturing, healthcare, engineering, accounting, broadcast media, case management, customer service, electrical apprenticeships, education, forklift operating, law enforcement, machining, mechanics, sales, trucking, warehousing, and welding. Bodine Electric, CCMSI, Cross Point, Danville District 118, Danville Metal Stamping, Dawson Logistics, Flexengate, McDonald's, McLean Midwest, and ThyssenKrupp are some of the local employers that plan to participate. Employment service agencies such as StaffQuick and Trillium will be on hand, as well as several Champaign-Urbana businesses such as Human Kinetics and Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab, and the Decatur Police Department. Some employers have part-time positions as well, Catlett said. Kickapoo Landing Adventures is new to the job fair this year, and he has part-time jobs for college-age kids that would be a great summer job for them, he said. The job fair, however, is not just for DAC students. We need as many folks as can come through the job fair, Catlett said. The job fair also coincides with annual State University Transfer Day. For the 10th year in a row, representatives from 10 universities will be on hand at the job fair from 9 to 11 to discuss university transfer options. The opportunity to meet with university representatives is open to everyone, but is particularly aimed at DAC students who eventually would transfer to a university. Next article is entitled City Keeps Eye on Tower Van Dyke House by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. A couple buildings in the city people often ask about are the former Bressy Tower, now being called Collins Tower by the new owners, and Dick Van Dyke's childhood home. We all want this to be successful, Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said of Collins Tower. They haven't kept their word. In a recent social media post, Jerry Collins, who owns the building with her husband Chris, said they have the tower listed on the National Register of Historic Places and are working with the State Historic Preservation Office and other specialties to work on the project. We are working with several companies concerning our options on the exterior of the tower. One company, based out of Champaign, will be directing this project, she stated. The city of Danville has been kept in the loop, and we are working together to ensure all goes well and as planned. One of the most common questions that I have received is regarding the usage of the property. That may change a little bit, but under the direction of our partners, we are taking into consideration one of the most common requests for usage of the building and will let you know the decision as it is finalized, Jerry Collins said. Jerry Collins didn't return a phone call from the commercial news, but sent an email. She asked that things remain off the record and said she will be happy to give an update after a conference with city staff. Please know we are working hard and doing everything we can to get this project done, she said through the email. Williams said the city will start legal action against the Collinses if safety of the building isn't addressed. He said the last time the city is aware of falling debris is the end of October 2018. Williams said he met with the Collinses in November and they promised to get the cornice removed. Plans had been reportedly rescheduled due to weather late last year, and scaffolding also again went up. Little has been heard since by city officials. Williams said the owners continue to receive income from the antennas on top of the building, including a Sprint antenna replacement that occurred on the tower. Also in December, Vermilion County Board Chairman Larry Bowne said one of the questions county officials have this year is what to do with the courthouse annex building. Bowne then said they were waiting for more financial and investor information from Chris and Jerry Collins, who took over the adjacent tower. The Collinses have talked about incorporating the annex, which is adjacent to the tower, into tower plans. Bowne said the county wants to look out for the taxpayers and make sure of any plans and financial abilities for the building. Another structure that the public continues to ask city officials about is the Van Dyke House on Hazel Street. Williams said he's not heard anything on that structure. Todd Regan, executive director with the Dick Van Dyke Foundation, said through an email the organization hopes to get back to Danville soon, team together to determine what we can and can't afford to do this year. Until then, we are working with Deanna Witzel to help us identify partners and contractors, and also to help us produce a special event honoring the talented young performers in Danville. We have no official announcement about either of those things yet. As always, this is an all-volunteer team, so we don't move at the speed of light, but we do keep moving forward thoughtfully. There's a lot for us to balance right now between the foundation's core mission to provide grants and scholarships and our side project to save Dick's boyhood home. While we may do more events or fundraisers in Danville, we are not counting on just funds from Danville to complete the project, though we do intend to use all funds raised in Danville for Danville-related activities. The Dick Van Dyke Foundation for the Performing Arts also had at least one fundraiser in California. Van Dyke visited Danville in June of 2016 for a welcome home reception and concert. Proceeds benefited the launch of the Dick Van Dyke Foundation for the Performing Arts. The foundation, formed by Van Dyke, was established to provide funding to nonprofit organizations and schools which empower youth to explore the performing arts and pursue their dream. About $50,000 was raised from those events for the foundation to go forward and toward scholarships and restoring Dick and Jerry Van Dyke's boyhood home at 930 North Hazel Street. It was initially estimated about $500,000 would be needed for renovations to turn the home into a museum. The house has continued to see windows broken out by vandals. The two-story home is owned by Dick and his wife, Arlene Silver. It had been abandoned for years, and plans are to turn it into a center for the Dandy Vandy Dick Van Dyke Foundation. Our next article is entitled Report, Sources Will Rise to Indiana Climate Change Challenge by Christopher Stevens for CNHI News Indiana, West Lafayette. As climate change brings hotter summers and warmer winters, Hoosier will use less energy to heat their homes, but more energy for air conditioning. And if current trends continue, a larger percentage of that energy will come from clean-burning natural gas and renewable resources like wind and solar power. That's according to the latest Indiana Climate Change Impacts Assessment Report, Climate Change and Indiana's Energy Sector, released in February. The Purdue Climate Change Research Center coordinates the annual report, which draws on research from dozens of Indiana universities and stakeholder groups. While energy used for heating will fall significantly, the report suggests the increased use of air conditioning will grow Hoosiers' overall energy consumption. Rising temperatures will cut Indiana's residential energy consumption by as much as 3% by mid-century. But the energy needs of businesses, which generally rely more on cooling than heating, will increase by as much as 5.5% over that period, a potential overall cost increase of more than $100 million annually, according to the report. We will have more need for dealing with warm weather problems than cold weather problems, said Jeff Dukes, director of the Climate Change Research Center. If you're an energy company, you'll need to be prepared for these demand shifts, especially as summer needs may stress the state's energy infrastructure. Commercial versus residential. Assessing heating and cooling needs, the report found that in the commercial sector, most energy is devoted to space cooling rather than space heating or water heating. When it comes to Hoosier residences, the opposite is true. The highest fraction of climate-sensitive total energy demand is for space heating, followed by water heating, with space cooling having a relatively similar demand. The energy needed to cool retail and light industrial facilities would increase as the state's annual average temperatures rise 5 to 6 degrees by 2050 and 6 to 10 degrees by 2100, according to the report. Extreme heat is also projected to become more frequent and intense. Flooding and drought, wild variations in precipitation could also cause more spring flooding and summer drought, affecting coal delivered by barges and threatening cooling processes at power plants. If these trends continue, which the highest quality predictions seem to indicate, then coal will likely disappear from the energy mix, Raymond said. He projects renewable energy consumption to grow dramatically by the end of the century, with the balance between wind and solar determined by future infrastructure costs. And now we'll turn to our obituaries. The first is for Randy F. Perry of Crawfordsville, Indiana, passed away Thursday morning, April 11, 2019, at home. He was 72. Visitation will be 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time Tuesday at Burkhart Funeral Home, 201 West Wabash Avenue, Crawfordsville. Services will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time Wednesday at First Christian Church, 211 South Walnut, led by Pastor Mike Whitaker. Burial will follow at Oak Hill Cemetery North. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to one of the causes Randy and Christiana supported, specifically the Montgomery County Animal Welfare League, 1104 Big Four Arch Road, Crawfordsville, Indiana, or St. Jude Children's Hospital, Post Office Box 1000, Department 142, Memphis, Tennessee. Carol Marie Holmes, 64, went to be with our Lord at 10:17 a.m. Tuesday, April 9, 2019, at her residence. A homegoing celebration will commence at noon Tuesday, April 16th, at Carter Metropolitan CME Church, 448 East William Street, Danville. Visitation will be 11 a.m. until the time of service. Officiating, Pastor J. Michael Wright. Interment, Sand Hill Memorial Park. Robert Bob Varner, 83, of Catlin, passed away after a long, hard battle with cancer, beginning in 2006 with thyroid cancer. He lost the fight at 7:18 a.m. April 12, 2019, with his loving and devoted wife by his side at home. Funeral service noon Tuesday, April 16th at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. Burial in Oak Ridge Cemetery with Catlin American Legion providing military honors. Visitation 10 a.m. to noon Tuesday at the funeral home. Casual dress is appreciated. Memorials may be made to local animal shelters. Mary Lee Morris, 83, was called into eternal rest on April 8, 2019. A homegoing celebration will commence at noon today, April 15, 2019, at Philadelphia Baptist Church, 423 North Washington Street, Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of service. A public viewing was held 1 to 4 p.m. yesterday, Sunday, April 14th, at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, E. Williams Street. Officiating, Pastor Courtney Watson. Interment, Atherton Cemetery. Michael White, 62, of Westville, died at 8:35 p.m. Wednesday, April 10th, 2019, at home. A celebration of life will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today at Brunswick Bar, 207 West Main Street, Westville. Rortvelt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton, is in charge of arrangement. So that celebration was actually held yesterday, sorry. Mary Morris, 83, of Danville, died Monday, April 8, 2019, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. Funeral services will be today at Philadelphia Baptist Church, 423 North Washington Street, Danville. Pastor Courtney Watson will officiate. Burial will be in Atherton, Danville. Visitation was today at 11 a.m. at the church. Dorothy Dot McDaniel, 72, of Fairmount, passed away at 5:52 p.m. Wednesday, April 10, 2019, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. In keeping with Dot's wishes, private family services will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made in her memory to the Fairmount Rescue. The Robinson Chapel in Catlin is handling service arrangement. And now we'll turn to Rediscover Danville. Rediscover Our Vermilion County Roots by Carol Nichols. Recently, in researching Danville's birthday, I spent some time reading The History of Vermilion County by Hiram Beckwith, published in 1879. According to Beckwith, before the land was officially settled and plotted, establishing its own government, Vermilion County was held by a variety of European factions. From 1682 to 1763, we were considered part of New France, and the county was divided, with the north half considered part of Canada and the south half part of Louisiana. After the French Colonial War, we were under the rule of Great Britain, and in 1778, during the Revolutionary War, we became a part of Illinois country in the state of Virginia. In 1787, we were part of the territory of the United States northwest of the River Ohio. And in 1800, we were part of the Indiana Territory when what is now our county was divided into half the other way, with the east and west portions being part of St. Clair and Knox counties. In 1809, we became part of the newly formed Illinois Territory, and our area was all considered St. Clair County, with Cahokia near St. Louis our county seat. It wasn't until 1826 that Vermilion County, as we know it, was established, with the county the site of a booming salt production and trade. I bring this up to set the stage for an event this weekend at Forest Glen Preserve. The Vermilion County Conservation District will hold Mike and Diana Stevens, who reenact life in the 1700s, this Saturday and Sunday. If you've not had the opportunity to visit the Pioneer Homestead when the Stevenses are set up with their 18th century furnishings, take time to stop out. Even if you've met Mike and Diana, plan to come and visit again to see what new historical items they have to see and learn about. The Stevens began coming to Forest Glen as part of the French and Indian War reenactments, and now visit twice a year to provide visitors with an in-depth look at this distant part of our history. Visitors will be welcome on Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Admission is free. Call 662-2142 for more information, or see their website at www.vccd.org. And, FYI, there is still Forest Glen syrup available on weekends at the Ranger Station and weekdays at the Visitor Center until 4:30 p.m. The Conservation District is also hosting a full moon guided night hike at Kennecuck County Park on Friday from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m., beginning at the Environmental Education Center at the park at a fee of $5 per person. Email kfox@vccd.org for more information on this event. While trapping and salt production were early ways citizens lived off the land in Vermilion County, growing food from our rich soil is an industry that has provided employment and sustenance for our citizens from the very beginning through today. On Thursday, Danville Area Community College at 2000 East Main Street will host Ag Day, with lunch from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Mary Miller Complex at a cost of only 50 cents. This price represents the farmer's share of the typical price you pay for a similar lunch. Illinois Ag Director John Sullivan will give the keynote address at 12:30 p.m. Ag businesses will have displays including DAC, 4-H Extension, Illini FS, Growmark, Wixie Classic, Vermilion County Farm Bureau, Ag Drone Pro, John Deere, Prototype Division, Precision Agronomics, NRCS, Soil and Water Conservation, FSA, USDA, and FBFM. Other items of interest during the day are programs that will focus on careers and pathways to those careers for students, both high school and current college. Plus, the Ornamental Horticulture Sustainability Program will be holding their annual plant sale from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Julius W. Hegler Ornamental Horticulture Building. See www.dacc.edu for more information. Rediscover our Vermilion County roots this week. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for April 15, 2019. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.